This is Fab Figmentals, the podcast that explores the realm of curious creatures, magical monsters, and beautiful beasts. I'm your host, Lindsay Morse. On each episode of Fab Figmentals, we dive into the folklore and history of a different legendary creature and share a story about it. If you're a regular listener of the show, you probably won't be surprised to hear that Halloween is my favorite holiday. It's a time when we collectively allow ourselves to suspend our disbelief in the supernatural. We lean into spooky stories, put horror films on repeat, and delight in feeling our spines tingle. Adults and children alike set aside reality, and for one short season, we all allow ourselves to play pretend. But sometimes in our hunt for shivers, we come across something that blurs the line between the real and the make-believe. Something that isn't so easily set aside when the Halloween season ends. For me, the topic of today's episode is an example of just that, witches. You see, when we talk about witches, most of our minds jump to thoughts of the green-faced Wicked Witch of the West from The Wizard of Oz, or maybe the Sanderson sisters from Hocus Pocus. But witches don't all live inside storybooks and kids' movies. They feature prominently in history all over the world. And the hunt to rid the world of them left a wake of death and destruction that, to this day, seems almost unbelievable. Here in the States, we talk a lot about the witch trials in Salem, but Scotland has a vast and dark history with witches too. Today, we're going to zero in on the folklore and history of witches in Scotland, known as Banna Bwytseach. Let's dive in. I'd like to set the scene with a little Shakespeare. In Macbeth, Shakespeare's Scottish play, we meet three witches. We're introduced to them at the start of the play, but they get their 15 minutes of fame in Act 4. Huddled around a boiling pot, they recite the following words. Round about the cauldron go, in the poisoned entrails throw, toad that under cold stone, days and nights has 31. Sweltered venom sleeping got, boil thou first in the charmed pot. Double, double toil and trouble, fire burn and cauldron bubble. Fillet of a fenny snake, in the cauldron boil and bake. Eye of newt and toe of frog, wool of bat and tongue of dog. Adder's fork and blind worm's sting, lizard's leg and howlet's wing, for a charm of powerful trouble, like a hell broth boil and bubble. Double, double, toil and trouble, fire burn and cauldron bubble, cool it with a baboon's blood, then the charm is firm and good. This spell casting returns ominous visions of the future, troubling forecasts that foreshadow Macbeth's downfall. I first read Macbeth back in high school English class, and this part was without question my favorite part of the play. What I didn't know at the time, however, was the context in which the scene was written. Macbeth was first performed in 1606 in London, and at that time, witches were a real concern up in Scotland. Witch trials in Scotland began in the early 16th century, and things reached fever pitch in 1597, in what is now known as the Great Scottish Witch Hunt. All across the country, 400 people were put on trial for their alleged associations with witchcraft, and as many as 200 were put to death. When you think that Macbeth's witches first walked onto the London stage only 9 years later, it casts a darkness on their presence. What I once read as fun and lighthearted verse now seems weighty. The witch trials in Scotland continued with varied fervency well into the 1700s, and by the end it's estimated that more than 1,500 people were killed. 75% of those were women. Things eventually calmed, and in 1763 an act was passed that prohibited the legal persecution of witches, essentially putting the slaughter to rest. But a widespread belief in witches wasn't so easily quelled. For today's story, we're going to look at Robert Burns' Tam O'Shanter, a poem that was written in 1790 and tells of a man's close encounter with witches, warlocks, and the devil himself. The site of this demonic party is the Alloway Kirk, a small church outside Ayr in the southwestern part of Scotland. Burns' own father lies in eternal rest in the cemetery there, and the poet seems to have believed wholeheartedly in the spot's association with witches. He provided the publisher with three true witch stories about the Kirk to accompany the poem. Neil Cooper, the host of our sister show, Assassinations Podcast, is going to read an abridged version of the poem for us today. But before we dive in, I want to give a quick overview of the plot. Burns' verse is beautiful, but he uses Scott's words that are often unfamiliar to the modern ear. Much like hearing Shakespeare read aloud, sometimes it's helpful to understand the context ahead of time so you can focus on enjoying the rhythm and flow. The story begins with Tam, a farmer who's getting drunk at a bar with his friends. It's a stormy night, and Tam sets out for home on the back of his horse, Meg. While riding past the local church, he notices that it's all lit up, and as he gets closer, he sees witches dancing and the devil playing the bagpipes. In his intoxicated state, he becomes transfixed by the risque hemline of one of the dancers, and lets out an appreciative, "Well done, Cutty Sark." Cutty Sark is the short skirt. At this, he's given himself away. The lights go out, and the witches come after him. Away he rides, fleeing on Meg's back towards the River Doon, for he knows the devilish creatures cannot cross the water. Will he make it? Let's go see. Here's Neil Cooper with Robbie Burns' Tam O'Shanter.
When chapmen bellies leave the street, and druthy neighbours meet, as market days are wearing late, and folk begin to tack the gate, while we sit bowsing at the nappy, and getting foo and unco happy, we think na on the lang Scots miles, the mosses, waters, slaps and stiles, that lie between us and our hame, where sits our sulky sullen dame, gathering her brows like gathering storm, nursing her wrath to keep it warm. But to our tale. A market night, Tam had got planted unco right, fast by an ingle, blazing finely, wi' reaming swats that drank divinely. And at his elbow, Suitor Johnny, his ancient, trusty, druthy crony. Tam loved him like a vera brother. They had been foo for weeks together. The night drave on wi' sangs and clatter, and aye the ale was growing better. The landlady and Tam grew gracious wi' favours secret, sweet and precious. The suitor talked his queerest stories, the landlord's laugh was ready chorus. The storm without might rear and rustle, Tam didna mind the storm a whistle. But pleasures are like poppies spread. You seize the flower, its bloom is shed. Or like the snowfalls in the river, a moment white, then melts forever. Or like the Borealis race, that flit ere you can point their place. Or like the rainbow's lovely form, evanishing amid the storm. Nae man can tether time or tide. The hour approaches, Tam maun ride. That hour, o' night's black arch the key stain, that dreary hour he mounts his beast in, and sick a night he tacks the road in as ne'er poor sinner was abroad in. The wind blew as twad blawn its last, the rattling showers rose on the blast, the speedy gleams the darkness swallowed, loud, deep and lang the thunder bellowed. That night a child might understand the deal had business on his hand. Wheel mounted on his grey mare Meg, a better never lifted leg, Tam skelpit on through dub and mire, despising wind and rain and fire, whilst holding fast his good blue bonnet, whilst crooning o'er some old Scots sonnet, whilst glowering round with prudent cares lest bogles catch him unawares. Kirkalloway was drawing nigh, where ghosts and hoolets nightly cry. Before him Doon pours all his floods, the doubling storm roars through the woods, the lightnings flash from pole to pole, near and more near the thunders roll, then glimmering through the groaning trees, Kirkalloway seemed in a blaze. Through ilka bore the beams were glancing, and loud resounded mirth and dancing. Maggie stood, right sair astonished, till by heel and hand admonished, she ventured forward on the light, and vow, Tam saw an unco sight. Warlocks and witches in a dance, nay, cotillion brent new frae France, but hornpipes, jigs, strath spays and reels put life and metal in their heels. A winnock bunker in the east, there sat Auld Nick in shape o' beast, a towsy tyke, black, grim and large, to gie them music was his charge. He screwed the pipes and girt them skirl, till roof and rafters a' did dirl. Coffins stood round like open presses that showed the dead in their last dresses, and by some devilish cantrape slight, each in its cold hand held a light, by which heroic Tam was able to note upon the holy table a murderer's banes in gibbet airns, twa span lang wee unchristened bairns, a thief new cut frae a rape, wi' his last gasp his gab did gape. Five tomahawks wi' blood red rusted, five scimitars wi' murder crusted, a garter which a babe had strangled, a knife a father's throat had mangled, whom his ain son o' life bereft, the grey hairs yet stuck to the heft. We mare, oh, horrible and awful, which even to name would be unlawful. Three lawyers' tongues turned inside out, we lies seemed like a beggar's clout. Three priests' hearts, rotten black as muck, lay stinking vile in every nuke. As Tammy glowered, amazed and curious, the mirth and fun grew fast and furious. The piper loud and louder blew, the dancers quick and quicker flew, they reeled, they set, they crossed, they cleek it, till ilka carlin swat and reek it, and coost her duddies to the wark, and link it at it in her sark. Tam kenned what was what full brawly, there was ain winsome wench and wally, that night enlisted in the corps, lang after kenned on Carrick shore, for mony a beast to dead she shot, and perished mony a bonny boat, and shook baith meikle corn and bear, and kept the countryside in fear. Her cutty sark o' paisley harn, that whilst a lassie she had worn, in longitude though sorely scanty, it was her best, and she was vaunty. Ah, little kenned thy reverent granny, that sark she coffed for her wee nanny, wi' twa pun Scots, 'twas a' her riches, had ever graced a dance of witches. But here my muse her wing maun cower, sick flights are far beyond her power, to sing how nanny lap and flang, a supple jade she was and strang, and how Tam stood like ain bewitched, and thought his very een enriched. Even Satan glowered and fidged full fain, and hotched and blew wi might and main, till first a caper sin another, Tam tint his reason a'thegither, and roars out, "Well done, Cutty Sark!" And in an instant all was dark. And scarcely had he Maggie rallied, when out the hellish legion sallied. As bees buzz out wi angry fyke when plundering herds assail their byke, as open pussies mortal foes when pop she starts before their nose, as eager runs the market crowd when "Catch the thief!" resounds aloud, so Maggie runs, the witches follow, wi Moni and Eldritch screech and hollow. Ah, Tam, thou'll get thy fairin, in hell they'll roast thee like a herrin. In vain thy Kate awaits thy coming, Kate soon will be a woeful woman. Now do thy speedy utmost, Meg, and win the keystane o' the brig. There at them thou thy tail may toss, a running stream they dare na cross. But ere the keystane she could make, the faint a tail she had to shake. For Nanny, far before the rest, hard upon noble Maggie pressed, and flew at Tam wi furious ettle. But little whist she Maggie's mettle, a spring brought off her master hale, but left behind her ain grey tail. The carline caught her by the rump, and left poor Maggie scarce a stump. No. Wha this tale, O truth, shall read, ilk man and mother's son take heed. Whene'er to drink you are inclined, or Cutty Sark's run in your mind, think ye may buy joys o'er dear. Remember, Tam O'Shanter's mare.
Did you catch the ending? Tam escapes the grasp of the witches. Meg is fast and swift enough to carry him to safety. But, sadly, she doesn't get away unscathed. One of the creatures manages to grab a hold of her tail and rips it clean off, leaving her with barely a stump. Poor Meg. Seems unfair that she's the one left hurting because of Tam's lecherous outburst, doesn't it? Anyway, this poem is a lot of fun. But it's important to remember that while it's easy to view this as a lighthearted romp, people actually believed the stories that inspired it. In the minds of many Scots in the late 1700s, witches were very real. And the bloody history of their targeted elimination was still very fresh when Burns put pen to paper. Over the course of the witch trials in Scotland, an estimated 4,000 to 6,000 people were tried for witchcraft, and over 1,500 were executed. Usually strangled, and then burned. The hunt for witches wasn't limited to Scotland, of course. There were witch trials taking place all over Europe. However, I think it's important to note that the environment in Scotland was especially zealous. Scotland saw 4 times as many persecutions as most of Europe, and though Scotland has 1/4 the population of neighboring England, there were 3 times the number of cases. Some folk healers were accused of witchcraft, but most cases were just average, unlucky members of the community who were called out for strange behavior, or simply blamed for the misfortunes of their neighbors. Once accused, there were several methods to determine whether or not the person was a witch. Sometimes their skin would be pricked with needles to see if they were protected by the devil and unable to feel pain. In other cases, victims might be kept awake for days, a process known as waking the witch, to see if they would confess. It shouldn't come as a surprise that a prolonged lack of sleep typically brings about hallucinations, and sleep deprivation as an interrogation technique is now commonly classified as a form of torture. This happened all over Scotland, and in the capital city of Edinburgh, many witches were strangled and burned near the entrance to Edinburgh's famous castle, along the castle esplanade, a large open walkway that exists to this day, and separates the castle from the rest of the town. I'm always astonished by life's little ironies, and there's a significant one here that I'll share with you now. As you may know, J.K. Rowling wrote the first Harry Potter books in the city of Edinburgh. And for those who've been living under a rock for the past couple of decades, I'll tell you a little bit about the plot. Harry Potter is a boy wizard, and he and his spellcasting friends study magic and battle the evil forces that always seem to be knocking at their door. The series has been a massive global success, and it's brought magic into the homes of children around the world. Rowling has gone on record to say that she did her best early writing in cafes dotted around the city, and she's named names. One of her favorite spots is a place called the Elephant House, a homey cafe with wooden floors and homemade cakes. She spent hours writing at the little shop, preferably at a corner table, often writing longhand, creating a world where wizards and witches are celebrated and admired. The great irony is that the Elephant House is located only a short 7-minute stroll from Castle Esplanade, the very spot where, in a different time and a different world, her beloved characters would have been put to death for witchcraft. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Fab Figmentals. Research, writing, and sound editing are done by me, Lindsay Morse. Our theme music was created by Graham Ronald. Neil Cooper, the host of our sister show, Assassinations Podcast, joined us to read Tam O'Shanter. Thanks, Neil. Great job. If you'd like to learn more about European witch trials, check our episode notes for a link to a recent video from Eventful Globe that looks at witchcraft in Central Europe. The episode features the famous story of the Flower Witch and showcases beautiful footage of Rikersburg Castle. The creators of Eventful Globe are friends of the show, and I can't recommend their channel enough. Thanks again for listening, and I hope you'll join me next time. I'm still finalizing the details for the next show, but I think I want to look at somnolites, those who have been hypnotized or entranced through the lens of mesmerism and animal magnetism. And I think it's time we read some Edgar Allan Poe on the show. We'll see you next time.